Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, interesting people pop in to rent something. We go through the films that they've loved across their life, and we are just here to help you figure out what you could be watching on streaming platforms and out in cinemas. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see the thing yesterday on the TV?
Top of the morning, guys.
What's up, Russell?
How you guys doing?
Hey, well, pretty good.
Good, dude.
Good.
Yeah, pretty good. Hey. Pretty good, man.
Where's that energy all the time?
So I just sat on a pin.
We have ourselves a Graham here today.
Hello.
We've got ourselves a Gad here today.
That's my name.
And we've got ourselves a me, Russell, here today. Yeah. Welcome to it. Welcome to the video store. Thank you for popping into our video store. Mm. We've got lots of cool stuff here on the shelf. And we've got a lovely day ahead of us. This is our guest episode.
Yep.
Where one of our customers here at the video store is going to pop in. And we're going to catch up with them and see what's going on in their life. And perhaps the movies that have inspired them across their life. Today on the show, Nicky Hammond.
Yes.
Yeah. Just Nick Hammond.
Yeah.
Good old Nick Hammond. He's a good friend. He's really become a good friend. He is a radio personality on 5FM, and we've just seen him climbing up the ranks. He is now helming the coveted breakfast show,
which
we're very proud of him for having, and he is nailing it. But he is also a social media creator in many ways, and he's really doing some interesting stuff. I'm a bit of a foodie myself, so I appreciate the stuff that he puts out.
Nice.
And he really does explore, which I think is important because we don't really get the chance to explore specifically Joburg and South Africa as a whole. So I think we need guys like Nick in our lives.
Yeah.
Oh, I love Nick.
Yeah, and he's a sweetheart. Have you guys got something that can keep you busy?
I'm just going to go quickly go and get that. You know that stupid surgery that makes your legs a little bit longer?
Yeah.
I'm just going to do that quick.
What is the stupid surgery?
There's a surgery. They make your legs a little longer so that on Tinder you can put your heart slightly taller. But they don't make your arms any longer, so you look real weird.
Wild. Yeah, how do they make your legs taller?
They break your legs.
Wild.
And then they kind of like stretch them.
Yeah, they stretch your legs. Apparently it's horrible. Weezer. And it makes you like an inch taller, so it's not worth it in the slightest.
Just wear shoes with extra...
There you go. Just wear some platforms.
I think your heart's fine.
Yeah, I think my heart's fine as well, but I just think it'll be funny.
Okay. All right. Put yourself through that. Gaddy,
also, just like your legs are longer, but your arms are the same length, so you look stupid.
I am going to reorganize all the movies in the video store autobiographically.
Oh, I like that.
All right. Okay. Okay. All right. Cool. Well, you guys go do that.
Thanks.
Graham, good luck.
Yeah.
Gaddy, yeah.
I'm doing the surgery.
Yeah. All right. This is Nick Hammond popping in to rent something. Look who it is. It's radio's Nick Hammond.
I think that's what you said last time I was here. It's exactly how you intro me. Look who it is.
That sounds about right. That tracks. How are you, buddy?
Good. I'm fine. I'm recently readjusting to waking up super early, which has not historically been a big part of my life. So that's like the biggest thing from a I'm now tired in the afternoons and I take naps type of thing. But otherwise, I'm good, dude. It's like it's nice to see you.
It's a combination of you now doing the early show, the breakfast show.
It's entirely that.
And no, well, it's also because like you and me, we're in the sunset of our 30s.
Oh, right. I think you're older than me. I'm 33 now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think you've got a bit of mileage on me.
I've got a few more but points on you.
But I'm old. I fully acknowledge. I don't really like go out anymore. I've switched to day drinking. Yeah. And so last week Saturday, actually at L from Short Straw's birthday,
yeah,
I ninja bombed so hard.
Nice.
Yeah, well, the tragedy is no one really noticed.
But that's the point of a ninja bomb.
No, but so that day, my wife and we went on a double date with another couple friend of ours.
Yeah.
They're immigrating to Germany, and so we went and there's this golf theme park thing you can do at the World of Golf where like It's the whole, the driving range is linked up to these sensors
that
let you know where the ball's landed, and you play like you play like Minesweeper with golf, and you play darts with golf.
I'd love to play that with you. Can we go?
Yeah. I'm an ambassador for the Sunshine Tour, which is like, it's a real thing. But I'm terrible at golf, so
I didn't put you for a golfer.
Thanks so much, man.
No, a golfer doesn't look like anything. it's never been in my periphery. It's like the guys from Desmond and the Tutus. There's enough pictures of them on golf courses for you to know that they enjoy golf. But I didn't peg you for a golfer.
I'm not really, but I really enjoy. I'm playing golf tomorrow. And I'm at the World of Golf a week.
I'd love to play these games with you.
You should.
It sounds so fun.
So we did that, and I had like 4 beers doing that. Okay. And then got home at 6, and then Al's birthday, his 39th, started at like 7.
Yeah.
So I rallied, and my wife dropped out. She was like, I'm not coming. I can't do it. They'll have to just believe that I exist. and then I got there, and I had like really good chats with a couple people for about an hour. I had 2 more beers, and then 9 o'clock, I was at home. With KFC.
Lovely. I realized when I came home that I actually didn't even literally say goodbye to L.
I didn't say goodbye to anybody.
And it was okay, but can I tell you a great Ninja Bomb story? I think you'd appreciate this. On one of the short straw tours to Japan, we stopped in a one stop in the middle of nowhere because we did some of these, you know, travels in a van for a good 5 or 6 hours. You only got to bed at 4 in the morning. You then had to be in the hotel lobby at 8, 9. So when we're in the van, we just sleep. Okay. So you wake up in this random place and you're going to have a wee and you buy a little snack from the shop. That's always fun.
Sandwich.
Yeah. So that's always fun. On one random day, the host said, "We are in ninja country." And we were like, "What does that mean?"
Wow. Okay.
And she said, "No, ninja, the ninja comes from this part of Japan."
So okay.
She said, "Okay, that's cool." And she said, "We must all pose for a photo like a ninja."
Oh, no, I'm out.
And, she showed us that there's this particular.
I don't care. I'm out. It's going to backfire.
No,
I'm
well, there's this that. Particular thing you do with your hand. It kind of looks like you're sort of praying, but you're sort of holding guns. You know, it's quite hard to explain.
Right. No, I've got an image. I'm
okay, but there's this thing, and she said, "You all got to pose like that because that's ninja. That's the ninja pose." So we did this photo, and that was that. Myself and Jake in short straw are two notorious ninja bombers. We're the first train guys. We're
good men.
Quick to leave. So we've now got this secret little code where we do this thing with our hands.
Okay.
And we just make eye contact and one of us does it and then we know. And then the other one just like nods.
It's his time.
It is like, this is the symbol for I am about to ninja bomb.
I always thought, I've just had the realization, I started saying, so in Japan there's Okinawa, which is that island that was added to Japan at the end of the Second World War.
Yeah.
That had the Rukyu Kingdom as part of it. Like, it was a kingdom before it became a country and a state. And that's where karate was from.
Ah.
That, I know that. And that's cool. So Mr. Miyagi in the Karate Kid movies, he is from Okinawa.
Okay.
As a karate master.
Lovely. you've just walked into our video store. Have you got something to return?
Yes, I actually, this works out because I watched this last night. I am bringing back on time Tom Hanks's A Man Called Otto.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, I watched it yesterday. Cool. It's really good.
And you've brought it back in time, so I'm not going to charge you.
I'm only bringing this up because something that I get so much anxiety about is that years ago I rented a DVD and I lost it.
It
was at the time that I was moving house and days turned to weeks, turned to months. And it just got to the point where I was like, I don't think I can go back now and explain myself. Like, they haven't found me.
Yeah.
I don't think they ever will. And it ate me up for years.
It's amazing how much that did play on our morals.
Yeah, it did. And then one day I went back home and found out that video store had closed.
Yeah.
And it was because people don't rent movies anymore. But of course, in your mind, you're like, that money they lost, that's why they closed. They closed because of me.
Did you ever hear about the early version of Netflix? We didn't get it in South Africa.
Yeah.
But it was a marvelous idea. And for those who don't know, it was a DVD rental store, but it was all through the post. Because in America, the postal system
works.
And the idea was you had a list and it went in order. And so you got the first disc and you could only get the next one if and when you returned the one you were watching now.
Smart.
So you could have it for as long as you want, but you were just never going to get the second on the list if you didn't return it.
That's probably a good thing.
Which it's is quite a smart way to do it.
Yeah, it ensures that they get their DVDs back.
Mm.
Yeah, I again, well,
what did you think of the film?
Oh, Man Called Otto.
Mm.
Thought it was brilliant.
It was lovely. Yeah.
I love Tom Hanks. The whole thing, he's America's dad. I buy into it heavily. He's a really good actor. I think that he's like a subtle actor. Like, he never overdoes things.
Yeah.
So is that when he does, like when he has that fallout with his coconut friend in Castaway,
yeah,
it's a much bigger deal because he hasn't been overdoing it.
Yeah.
He's just been acting adequately.
It's like that one time you see your dad cry in real life.
Yeah,
like,
oh shit. Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing as, like, I remember that Jimmy Iovine once said of Bono that the reason Bono is brilliant is because he shows his brilliance very selectively and not all that often. So, meaning to say, the dude's got a massive vocal range, but if you listen to, like, Joshua Tree, you hear that three times.
Mm.
Whereas if you heard it on every track, you'd be like, he's a one-trick pony, this is cheap.
Yeah.
It's not as interesting anymore. And I feel like Tom Hanks is that as an actor. Like, he doesn't do all that he can do whenever just for the sake of it. And then in A Man Called Otto, that's kind of the point, because it's like a mundane story. It's just, this guy's going to kill himself. He's had a rough go at life and he's worked out that there's nothing left to live for.
Yeah.
And then the slow, seemingly inconsequential interactions that he has with a family and a child give him a sense of purpose again, and like remind him that there is beauty in the mundane. He's the perfect actor to do it.
Yeah. No, and the trailer is a little deceiving. It makes you think that he's going to be too mean and too grumpy.
All right.
Because he's sort of very set in his way and he sort of lives in this little panhandle, and you can see he's that annoying guy in the Residents Association
he's
group.
He's the Grinch.
He's the Grinch. But yeah, then as you said, this beautiful family that's kind of the opposite of him, a sort of a louder Mediterranean or Latin family,
and they're
come in and this precocious, well, not precocious, but like a sweet little girl like befriends him.
She's a kid. She's not corrupted by the things in the world that made him really sad.
Yeah, because they actually give you a little trigger warning at the start of the film that, you know, you're going to see depictions of someone wanting to commit suicide. So Tom Hanks is now done. His partner in life has passed away. So, yeah, he's wanting to kill himself. And then he finds a sort of a reason to live. It's a great film.
I really liked it. I've always thought Tom Hanks is great, but I don't know what it is. He's just, the algorithm has been suggesting a lot of his movies to me of late.
Mm.
So I'm obliging.
There's a movie that's coming out later this year called Here. Do you know about it?
Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
I don't.
Okay, so this is Robert Zemeckis, who is the director behind Forrest Gump and like Back to the Future and so many of the films that we've loved. With Tom Hanks, who he did Back to the Future, I mean, which he did Forrest Gump with. And even fucking Jenny from Forrest Gump is in this movie.
Jenny. It's amazing.
And it's based on a graphic novel, I believe. And it's coming out later this year. It's coming out at the start of November, where it seems as if the whole movie is set in this one place, this house. Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But it shows the history of this land. Like, from the fucking dinosaurs to, like, colonizing to wars to everything, till eventually it's the story of this family in this house.
I'm in.
Hey?
I'm sold.
The trailer, like, doesn't move. It feels like it's one shot.
Because I've seen that before, the movie where it's, like, it's a murder mystery film. It's three generations of people in the same house, and someone dies mysteriously in each generation. And then you only find out after the fact that they're all linked, and the house is, like, the setting that doesn't change. So I've seen that concept before, but not going all the way back to the beginning of time.
Yeah, so it's called Here, and it's going to be in early November.
I'm in.
Yeah, seems keen. I think it's going to be a cool bioscope film. But tell me about your exciting things, man. So how's the breakfast show for you?
So I didn't think I would ever do it. So I think it's worth mentioning that, like, in the radio world, it's considered the top of the hill.
Yes.
Like, it's the coveted thing.
Yeah.
And that had never really been a perception that I held personally. But I'm self-aware enough to know that that is the thing that is considered. It's very rarefied air. I think in 5FM's history, there's like 15 people that have done it. And the station's like 45 years old.
You know, the Gareth Cliffs.
And, so all these people that I grew up admiring, you know, like Gareth and Fresh. Roger did it, and then you can go back further, Alex J, Martin Bailey. Like, these are people that I consider great, right?
Yeah.
And so it wasn't lost on me. It was just that I was at a very particular place in my life in that we just sold our home in Johannesburg, my wife and I, who at the time of accepting the offer would have then been married for about 8 months. We're in the process now of starting to try for kids. A big part of raising children for us had previously involved raising them in Cape Town because my brother, who's got two nephews who are at school, live in Cape Town. My other brother lives in Cape Town. My sister's in Cape Town. My parents are in Cape Town.
Okay.
And my wife's parents are in the middle of the Eastern Free State. So it's 7 hours drive from here. It's 2 hours and a two-hour flight and 2-hour drive from Cape Town.
Mm.
So there were all these pull factors to the Cape. And also I'd done 10 years at 5FM.
Yeah.
I'd started out in a hybrid slot, which was 8 to 10 in the morning, went and did 9 to 12 for like 4 or 5 years. Did a drive show for the average amount of time that people do it for.
Mm.
4 or 5 years.
That was the last thing you were doing, was the afternoon drive.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like, that's the silver medal in radio, right?
Probably the next best. Probably, yeah.
You're either taking us to work or you're taking us home.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I kind of felt like I'd said what I needed to say, and the brand had been good for me, and it's a youth brand, and I'm getting older, you know. And then, so as the offer came, they said, hey, we want you to do breakfast. And I was like, thanks, but no thank you. I'm going to politely decline the request, which was... It turned out to be a really good thing for me, because then what happened is I realized that, because sometimes someone says, we want you to do it, as in like, you're our first choice, but there's 5 other people.
Yeah.
In this instance, what happened is I said no, and about 2 weeks later they came back and they were like, we really want you to do it. Yeah. What would it take?
Yeah.
And so like, I'm lucky in that I'm sure we'll talk about it, but like I do a lot of social media stuff.
Yeah, I want to get into that.
And
that
pays me, and I own a marketing company, and I'm very lucky to get like a decent amount of work through that. And I have, you know, ambassadorships and things. Like, as in, I didn't need it. I didn't need this show.
It's a nice position to be. Like.
Yes, because it allowed me to have the cards in an industry that is so famously ruthless. And I didn't want it. And they came back to say, what would it take? And so I was like, it wasn't cheeky, but I stood my ground, and I was like, these are the things that I want. And a lot of them went to do with, I want to have the freedom to do the kind of show that I want to do that I actually think would be interesting for a morning radio show in South Africa. Considering the fact that there's also so many great people that are on morning radio at the moment, I had to know that I could do something different, like not trying to be another one of these people.
Okay.
And they said, they said yes to all. They were like, yeah, tick all the boxes, you go off and you can do it. So now it's like a dream come true.
What were those things that you wanted to do that were different?
So the one thing, it's an unsaid thing about the pressure that's usually there. So the pressure that's usually there is, I need this job, and if I don't play ball when I'm asked to play ball, I'm not going to get another contract.
Sure.
So already that's like most of it. This idea that I don't care. They could phone me now and be like, that, you know, that's all she wrote. And I would say, cool. I'm doing what I want to do, so...
Yeah,
you can't threaten me with that. So that's the first thing. The other thing was money. I put a price down, and they matched the price that I wanted.
Sure. But I mean, what was the show that you wanted to make that you felt was going to be different from other? What is the room you even have in morning commercial radio to be different?
So what I have noticed is that
is the current standard, and what were you trying
there's,
to
there's,
achieve?
There's a lot more. People are listening a lot more intensely in the morning than in the afternoons, first thing I'll say.
Okay.
So everything you say, you could almost say something on drive that would be considered provocative or risque, and you wouldn't really
feel it.
You just said it, and one or two people on the WhatsApp line are like,
tired.
Wow.
I'm tired. I'm on my way home. It's like,
in the morning, anything you say, people come for you, and they have opinions on, which is great, because it means that they're engaged. So what I meant was, and what I still mean, is the easiest way for me to describe it is that there's a huge difference, and the listener can tell immediately, between a person who's actually talking, like as in actually like unfiltered saying the things that they want to say, versus somebody who's very carefully dancing around things in order to create a product that then becomes a radio show that works and has good advertisers and investment and a solid listener base. So... it's a stupid example, but I mean, the other day we did a thing. We tried to find the biggest penis in South Africa. So we were like, We want to see how big can it get, and you know, you had people phoning in with like hilarious stories. You had some guys being like, "Oh, obviously it's mine because whatever." And we struck the balance that I was hoping we'd strike, in that people just spoke like they talk at Briars and speak to each other and actually are as human beings. Yeah. It didn't feel like a radio show. It didn't feel like this thing that's ultimately going to end off with like a, if you want the best insurance in South Africa, here's how you get it. It didn't feel like something that was. It felt like a real conversation. And it might sound like a silly example, but that's what I mean.
Okay.
Like, I want the ability to also be trusted to do the things that I want to do. Like, I've taken my radio show to Antarctica and to Colombia and all over South Africa 7 times and into half of the African continent. And I wanted the trust to keep doing that, to be able to still do that on the morning radio show. And then it was, you know, it comes down to things of like, very often you'll have ideas, you'll have campaigns that you'll want to get across the line. And historically, you can get a lot of, oh, we can't do this because of reasons A, B, and C.
Yeah.
So that was part of it. I said, like, here are the things that I want to do.
Mm.
These are the campaigns that I want to run. These are the spaces I want to play in. Say yes. And they said yes. So it's a lot of stuff that, like, isn't really that easy to explain in terms of how the listener is going to perceive the thing. But it's more just... You work at a job and there's stuff that you want to do and you tell them this is...
Yeah. Especially when you've come with so much experience, because you then know what kind of thing you want to achieve. It's a little bit like starting a relationship in your 30s, you know, as opposed to diving into marriages in your 20s where you're like, I know what I want.
Yes, exactly.
I know what I don't want.
That's what I mean.
I want to be home with my KFC at 9 o'clock.
Yeah,
exactly. I don't want to be talking shit in the bar at 1 in the morning. So if you're with someone who wants that, it's like, you know this is not going
to
work.
Yeah, exactly. And it manifests in things like that. It's like, don't ask me to do the thing that the other presenters are just going to do.
Yeah.
Don't ask me to attend this thing. Don't tell me to come to the... Because I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
Unless I want to be there.
Yeah.
But in terms... It doesn't mean that I'm going to go on in and swear and try to offend the whole country, because it's not in my nature. It's more just to do with like employment conditions that I'm happy with.
Yeah, and to feel authentically yourself.
Yeah.
Because if that really has the room to come out, then we'll feel it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not that I wasn't doing that. It's just that there's a bit more pressure in the morning.
No, and you just get, and you just get to sort of restructure, which is great.
Yeah.
Lovely, man. You always were good in social media. You always had a following. You were, and in our many years of knowing each other, I've always seen you sort of being very proactive. But something's happened recently.
In the last year,
I feel like you've shifted gears. You've like gone on a... You've moved into sort of like another sort of echelon, so to speak. And I think it's mostly, at least objectively, I can say, it's mostly because of your food exploring, right?
Yeah.
Is that a safe way to say it?
So
you started producing these great videos, also just very authentically you saying, I want to find the best burger in Joburg.
Yes, yeah.
And it struck a little chord with me, because these were things I was also always very interested in doing, which was exploring Joburg. That's what arguably led to the Bioscope. You know, we didn't just do this in a shopping mall or in Fourways. There's a reason why the Bioscope started in Maboneng, and it was because we were interested in exploring and being with those people that were unlocking and, you know, rejuvenating these kind of forgotten parts of downtown. And I loved that. It was such a big part of my soul.
Yeah.
Was going on that quest. So when you started, you know, not just eating the typical burger, but going into like Fordsburg and like all these other beautiful parts of the city, I could see that this was going to be a good thing.
It was really validating, because so I've been doing this for 10 years. I've been traveling the country, finding people, places, hidden gems that make it exciting. Small towns. I spent...
Yeah, you always do like a formalized road trip in your show.
Yeah, right? So once a year we do the Heritage Tour, which is now in September going into its 8th year. And that's a month on the road, just finding out cool stories about South Africa.
Yeah.
I've got the Africa Tour as well, which is trying to do the same thing for the continent. Like write a love letter to Africa and show that it's an awesome place, because it gets a lot of bad PR. And I mean, we've done Zimbabwe, Zambia, Botswana, Mozambique, Namibia, Eswatini, Lesotho. So this track record is kind of like there. I wrote a TV show for 3 years that literally was just doing the same thing, finding good South African stories.
What was that show?
It's called The Insider.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so I wrote that. And then it just almost like serendipity, almost by accident. So what happened is, I think about a year and a half ago, I decided to try to take social media more seriously because
it's got to be a conscious effort.
Yeah, yeah, it has
for
to be.
For anyone who dismisses the sort of influences of the world, the ones that really like do it, don't dismiss how much fucking work it takes.
Oh, dude, it's a full-time job.
It's and a full-time
I mean,
job.
Yeah, I think it's a very naive thing to be like anti social media just as a thing. It's too big now. You can't. Yeah. But I mean, there's a bit of background. Like, I headed strategy for 3 years for an agency, or for like 2 years for an agency called Be Caleb, which was a digital agency. And so I had to work with social media accounts for like big pharmaceutical brands, and we did RESA. So I was involved with building the SAMA strategy a couple of years ago. And through that process, I also studied digital marketing. So I learned about how like paid media works and how search engine optimization works. And so like I kind of had this basket of understanding of social media as like a tool.
Yeah.
And then I thought, like, I want to take my own stuff seriously because I'd love to. I just wanted an independent voice outside of the rest of my life, which is all contract work. Mm. So I'm contracted by the SABC to do a radio show. I'm contracted by this company to write this thing. And I just wanted my own thing.
Yeah.
So I just started telling stories of places that I had been going to for years, like a Fordsburg, for example.
Which is the more sort of Indian part of Joburg, for those who don't know.
It's I can give the abridged history of the place.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, there's Fakkel in Gauteng. There's farms, and they find gold on one of them. Mm. And over time, people start...
Oh, that abridged.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, no, I'm joking. I'm joking.
People start kind of want to make money off the gold.
Sure.
And so Fordsburg gets developed as a low-cost housing area. It was some guy Ford and some guy Berger or something like that.
Sure, sure.
And then over time, the areas surrounding it start to become more South African Indian areas, like Fitas and Mayfair.
Yes. Yeah.
But then forced removals happens, and a lot of those people get pushed out to areas like Lenasia in the south of Johannesburg.
Mm.
But some stay and they retain a bit of a presence in areas like the plaza that then get built, where those previous business owners that were in areas like Fitas could go back and now rent their business spaces from the plaza, which was built by the government. It was like a private business government partnership that was done in the 70s. So the businesses start coming back in there.
This is the Oriental Plaza. It's Oriental Plaza in Fordsburg. Famous kind of shopping center of sorts.
Yeah, it's in the middle of Fordsburg.
Yeah.
And so then that Indian presence, despite it like attempts to move it out, it always kind of hold on and are there.
Mm.
So then back in what like the 70s and 80s, there's like a lot of like Indian culture that's linked to that area. So there's famous restaurants like Solly's Corner and Kentucky Milk Bar, and there's the famous theaters, the Majestic, that show show double features on a Saturday. And it was also kind of like, because you had theaters in the townships as well, and because of the grayness of apartheid, where like Indian people were classified differently to black people, these cinemas were somewhat more multiracial than other spaces allowed.
Yeah.
And guys in the township would come through, because famously township theaters wouldn't show the entirety of films. They'd be like Indiana Jones this weekend, and then halfway through it would just stop. Because I think a number of reasons. The one hand, because apartheid was a super menacing time, and like even things like people's ability to enjoy their lives after hours from an entertainment perspective were curtailed for a variety of reasons. Okay. I also think that sometimes these cinemas would get sold bootleg versions.
And they would have scenes missing or reels missing. Okay.
So the Majestic was a place where that wouldn't happen. And you could go and watch a double feature. So there's all this like culture in the day and at night and these beautiful stories. And then what happens post-apartheid is South Africans, our borders open up quite a bit, and immigrants from different parts of the world start to come. And as they do, they look for places to go. And you obviously want some sense of cultural assimilation. So if you're from Pakistan or India, where the South African Indians are, you're going to go. And also if you're Somalian, you're going to come here and you want areas that have mosques and things like that that are like similar ethnically or religiously to you. And then through time, the Jordanians have come, the Palestinians have come, the Syrians have come, the Egyptians have come, Bangladeshi. Yeah. So they're all there now in this mix that is Fordsburg.
It's lovely. It's such a great place to be. We did a film festival at the Majestic.
No kidding.
As the Bioscope. Yeah, there was a lovely dude called Faisal who has been a good person for cultural events in that kind of Fitas, because that was its kind of original name.
Yeah, so Fitas is, it's the adjacent suburb, but yeah, it's all part of the same
kind of history. He was part of something called the Fitas Foundation, and we did this majestic film screenings in the Majestic. We brought it kind of back to life, so to speak, as the bioscope. It was lovely.
Sick.
The Fordsburg Film Festival, we did it, sure. I wish we could have done more, but it was quite a long time ago. But yeah, that's when you realize that there's this beautiful food there, Bismillah, yeah, and like all, yeah, these beautiful,
yeah,
restaurants.
Amazing.
Okay.
And then, so, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you start these videos, and needless to say, they've been successful and given you a whole new audience.
Yeah, exactly. And it started out with stuff that I knew about, because I think it helps. Like, I'd like to think that I take a lot of time to understand the histories of the areas that I'm in, and like I'm fascinated by so much more than just the food. Like,
yeah,
how do these people get here? Where are they from? Why are they here? What's the community story? Because it's never just food, right? Like every, yeah, you know, if you go to Cape Town and you want to have a Gatsby, and you have fierce debates with people about where the best one is, and most of it's because where did their parents take them?
Yeah,
like where did they go on a Saturday when there, yeah, was, you know, no one wanted to cook in the house, they wanted to have, yeah, a good takeout. So, you know,
and did they love their parents, and did they love that Sunday?
Yes.
You know, when they tried it for the first time. So that's why it's the greatest for them, because it's linked to a memory, and it's linked to love, and it's linked, yeah, to, you know, a happy day. It's,
yeah, exactly. And that is food. Food, you know, is like, food is an overwhelmingly positive thing. Yeah. The experiences people have with it are positive.
Similar to movies.
Yeah, it is, you very know, similar. It's storytelling.
There's an incredible movie that if it caught you on a bad day, or, you know, your mom had died, or like, you know, something horrible, it wouldn't be the same as, you know, the movie your mom took you to, you know, and, yes, you had a magical day. It's like, it's they're so linked to memories. Yeah. Same as music.
Nothing just happens, right? Everything's, yeah, got a story behind it.
So, oh, it's lovely, man. So you're just keeping at that, and that's just for you, right?
Well, I mean, so yes, in a nutshell, but like I've had these incredible experiences now where I've got to go to like in amazing parts of our country. Like I've got really involved with the Somalian community that exists in Mayfair. And like, I know, I've come to learn a lot about their history, and I've gone into beyond just the show, because these are all worlds that are existing within our own the entire time.
Yeah.
And I've kind of got into them, like into the Chinese community and into different South African communities where like I go and I cook in people's homes and I make those kinds of videos.
Oh, so
I've done
cool,
incredible stuff where like we've done things for soup kitchens where we've made videos for them, and then they've received like thousands and thousands of rands of donations, like literally 24 hours after we post. So these amazing things are happening.
Oh, so lovely.
And at the same time, like I'm monetizing my page. Like I do a lot of, I'm working with most of the food brands now.
Yeah.
I've recently also just heard back from one of the big banks who wants to get involved with like helping some of the businesses we've told the story of. They want to take that further. So there is like a self-interested component to just being a social media person, sure, but it's entirely passion driven.
It's just lovely that it's also just you.
It's just me. Everything's on my phone. Yeah. So I don't have to walk in with a camera crew. I don't have to feel like I'm invading anybody's space, which I think is, yeah, helpful. Because as soon as you, I've done enough TV to know that as soon as you walk in with big cameras and lights and directors and DPs, it no one's themselves.
Things. Yeah. Now that's what Limited Edition was for me. It was just like, I'm going to make the T-shirts that I want to see in the world.
Yeah.
And there's a few times when illustrators sometimes would send me something, I'd be like, this was probably going to do really well. So like, please don't say, if I say no, it doesn't mean that it's bad. It just might not be like what I want to make.
Yes.
But this would probably sell a fuckload.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly.
You know, but it's just lovely to have a product that you feel like is entirely yours, and its direction is totally based on your spirit and your enthusiasm. It's like, you don't have to make a video if you don't want to.
Yeah, but you, I mean, a year into it, and every day I want to go do it. Yeah.
Oh, lovely, man. Where did we grow up?
In Cape Town, in the southern suburbs of Cape Town.
Okay. And is there a movie that came to you when you were a kid that sort of...
Yeah, lots. So
had a big impact?
The memory surrounding that specifically is, so one of my good friends, his name was Michael, and we were the types of friends, you know, like BB gun wars with each other and playing in the fields with each other.
BB gun wars would be a really cool band name.
It would be awesome.
Elle from Short Straw keeps a note on his phone. When he gets really cool band name ideas,
yeah,
he read a bunch of them the other day, and they are some of the most incredible ones. There's one that I thought would be such a good band name called Speedboat Accident.
inspired by Sean Kingston or someone who that happened to.
I once was going through a pretty difficult time in my life, and my skin broke out in a stress rash. And I then went on tour and I explained, I've got to put this cream on, I've got this stress rash. And that was also like, cool band name.
Yeah, most band names.
So BB Gun Wars is a good one.
It is. Most of the greatest bands of the last 50 years, if you think about their names long enough, they become really dumb really quickly. Like, yeah, totally. Red Hot Chili Peppers is a stupid... If you pitch that now in 2024 to your mates, they'd be like, that's dumb, dude. But it's such a fucking awesome band name. It's the same as like Smashing Pumpkins. It's stupid, but it's awesome.
Limp Bizkit is the dumbest name.
Yeah, it's dumb. But that's amazing. You know what I mean? Like, it becomes amazing. It
becomes something else. Okay, so you playing BB Guns with your friends?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was that, like, when you think of a suburban childhood, he was my mate, you know, takeaways on a Friday night kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing that we would do on like a solid Friday would involve a bit of garden cricket into a trip to Steers. So the Steers where we grew up had a Blockbuster attached to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'd get like a rave burger and a milkshake, and then we'd go walk around Blockbuster to pick a film.
Yeah.
And very often what happened is you'd take a film and you'd take it to the front, and they would say, just, you know, they'd say to the parents, like, just so you're aware, this kid has rented this one like 8-9 times. And then the parents are obliged to say, like, you don't want to watch something you haven't seen? And then we'd throw mini tantrums and take out the same videos.
Okay.
So of that, that's
which
like...
Which was one of them that you kept
so doing. Lots. I mean, like, there's a lot of Adam Sandler stuff, you know, like, he was kind of the king of comedy as far as I was concerned at that time. But there was one film that I know this for a fact. I know that this film has 5% on Rotten Tomatoes. not that that's the be all and end all films, but I just know that that's the case because I realized later in life that, like, was this a good film? Is the realization that I had.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know if this made any impact on anybody else that, like, this will land, but it was called Almost Heroes. And it was a film that had Matthew Perry in it, who I think was in Friends at the time.
Okay.
So this guy would have been a huge deal at the time that this film came out.
But remember, it was the time in television and culture where TV stars were TV stars.
Yes.
They weren't movie stars. It was very rare that someone like George Clooney could go from ER and become a movie star.
Yes.
They tended to not be able to break the ceiling into the next.
So that was probably the part
of it.
God
forbid any movie star be on a TV show. Like, that would have been a sort of a death sentence.
You're selling out, so you're stepping down.
Well, yeah, this is a subpar, you know, format.
I still even
format.
Remember when... Kevin Spacey did House of Cards, there was still a bit of like, is he okay?
Yeah.
Did
he need to make ends meet?
Yeah.
But it was the start of what we are in now, which is the golden age of television, where, you know, the most famous people in the world are doing TV shows because they're incredible stories that just needed more time.
Yeah.
But what was Almost Heroes?
Okay, so Almost Heroes, it's got Matthew Perry and Chris Farley as the two leads in it.
Oh, this was great.
It was great, right?
It was about them crossing the country.
Yes.
In the time of the Wild West, where it was a race to see who could get to...
So Lewis and Clark are the actual history, the people who did this actually.
Yes.
And
the white man very famously sort of landed on the East Coast, and then the Wild West was them slowly populating westward to the LA, California side. But there was a time where no one had, in theory, who was white, made it to the other side of the country.
Yeah.
And Lewis and Clark were the first to sort of get to that, and the history books knows them.
Correct.
But then this was a movie about the two sort of
the fools who came second.
Who were racing and kind of got their second.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's always a number two, right? And so it's this huge anti-climax because they don't fucking... They don't get the thing that they've been building up to the whole movie, which is this race to the coast.
Okay, I remember that. No, and there was a scene with the eggs and the eagle and Chris Farley being poked by the eagle.
Yeah, Farley, he's stranded in the forest and he tries to get an egg from a bird up in a tree. And there's this whole sort of physical comedy scene that, classic and symptomatic of that time, just plays itself out for way too long, where he goes up to the top and has a fight with the bird and falls down and goes up again and then eventually gets the egg, and then I think he cracks it and it like misses the pan or something bad happens. I don't know. But so that film was one of the ones that like we would often rent, and I just thought it was brilliant. It might be good.
But it was good for you.
I don't care. But it was successful.
It was successful for what it was.
There was also one called Mystery Men with Ben Stiller.
That's an interesting one. That was the first time we were given this strange superhero movie.
Yeah, like an anti-superhero film.
It was the Suicide Squad long before the Suicide Squad. But they're all useless. They were useless people that had useless superpowers, but there was like a sort of punk rock edge to it.
It's an amazing film, and Kel from Kenan and Kel is also in it.
Yeah, Mystery Men is being a bit more recognized now.
Really?
Yeah, to some degree, people are like, that was a bit ahead of its time.
Cool, because I mean, I was ahead of my time then.
Yeah, no, it was Ben Stiller,
yeah,
William H. Macy, yes. Hank Azaria,
yeah,
but it wasn't. It was a little X-rated in the sense that it was a bit dark, it was a bit weird, it was a bit fucked up.
Yeah.
And so I think when it came out, people were like, this isn't Spider-Man, this isn't Superman, what is this? And then only if you really read a lot of comics do you realize a lot of comics are very similar to music and movies. Like, there's weird punk rock fucked up stuff.
Yeah.
Indie, weird exploratory stuff. And these guys made that movie.
Shit, maybe Almost Heroes is also like a sleeper classic.
Yeah. Maybe. Lovely. We then go on to high school. Where did we go to high school?
So, Rondebosch still. So, okay. I was born in the suburb of Rondebosch, which has Rondebosch as one of the schools that's there. So, I went to Rondebosch Junior School and Rondebosch High School.
Okay. All right. And in high school, we've got our high school crush film, which is... You know, you're a little bit older. Maybe you're not watching the more tamer comedies like Almost Heroes. Do you think Mystery Men was perhaps more a high school film?
No. But these are both from an early age.
Okay, what was a high school film that was perhaps a bit more dangerous sometimes? Or?
It may be disappointing from a danger perspective, but things that mattered the most to me when I was in school were skateboarding and music, with music being first and skateboarding second. So any film that was about anything to do with either of those two things around that time would have like killed it for me. So the obvious like Grind was a comedy that I was really into because it's a kid who follows his dream and he goes around the country to try and win a skate contest.
And that was called Grind.
It's called Grind, yeah.
Okay.
But I think my most definitive... A high school film for myself and my friends would probably have been Tenacious D's The Pick of Destiny.
Oh, shit. That was high school for you.
Yeah.
Okay, there's our age gap.
There you go. Yeah. So, that came out in what, like 2009, probably, around there?
Okay.
And so Jack Black was like an icon to myself and all of my friends. We listened to all of Tenacious D's music.
Yeah.
It kind of, you know, like we were young kids who were in bands ourselves. And just that idea of, because he also shouted out a lot of like the classic rock people that we would have grown up also with our parents listening to. So that was interesting and cool. Like Led Zeppelin and Motorhead and AC/DC. And so that was amazing. And then also just the idea that there is this film that exists, which is all centered around like Satan's guitar pick, you know, like a guitar pick that comes from the tooths of hell. That's amazing. Like to us, that was just right up our alley, and it was the funniest, coolest thing.
Okay, we had we it's ongoing, but we haven't done too many. We have a special little secret event that we do at the Bioscope called If I Owned a Cinema.
Yes,
and it's when we sort of figuratively give the keys to someone to say, well, if you were to own the Bioscope, what would you show? And you can invite your friends, and it's a private screening. You were one of the people we bestowed this to, and you chose School of Rock,
yeah,
which is also very similar in that it's Jack Black. It's this kind of love of music. It's him shouting out.
So I mean, School of Rock also, School of Rock is also like top five high school films, I think, for me, 100%. Just the idea to have music in a film for me, like, but as in that's like the centerpiece of what drives this thing. Like they're ultimately trying to enter a Battle of the Bands, like in School of Rock's case, or they're trying to make it as a band in The Pick of Destiny.
Yeah. Just this idea of, sort of making and leaving a legacy and doing something that matters. Those are sort of sitting at the core of those movies, which is something we can all relate to. We want to do something. We want to make a difference in life. We want to have something substantial. You know, we want to create.
Yeah. That was me.
Lovely. What kind of a dude were you in high school?
I mean,
skateboarding and listening to music, were you like a bit not as sort of first teamy guy?
In junior school, probably not. I think noticeably a nerd then. But then, like, by the end of high school, I was deputy head boy at the school, and I was like captain of the band and head of culture, and like fared decently in the creatively inclined academic subjects, and played sports, like was half decent at water polo. And also at our school, it was like kind of cool to be cultural.
Yeah.
Like it was cool to be...
Rondebosch had that. Yeah. You guys had that like kind of band show.
Yeah.
That you put on. A friend of mine...
Oh, cabaret.
A friend of mine went to Rondebosch. We were sort of primary school, sort of best friends. So he would have been a bit older than you. His name was Ian Groves.
Yeah.
And he is now a very established, very talented, fine artist. But very talented musician. He was in my like first bands when we were in primary school. And he would speak of Rondebosch having these shows.
They were called cabaret. Yeah. And if you played music, you wanted to be in cabaret. And the whole thing was it was reserved for grade 11s because it was actually a fundraiser to the Matric Dance. But they used to be, so you would do three dinner nights where parents would come, which was a hell of a lot of fun. But the reason everyone really wanted to do cabaret is because you did one night, it was on a Thursday, it was called concert night.
Yes.
And concert night meant girls from other schools could come. Yeah. And we sat in the quad called the Red Brick Quad and you played music. And the set list that you would do, because remember, it's typically catering to parents. So a lot of old school stuff would be in there. But the set list on concert night, you could add a couple more youth appropriate songs.
Yeah, and you would, it's the closest you get to like being like a cool band that was.
You are a rock star, well dude. In that moment, like you're playing in front of probably 200, but
yeah, people it's a big who deal. No, he spoke about that, and I was like, that sounds really cool. That
dude, you're made to feel like, and as someone who has now gone on into the world and, by some measures, considered like a public figure, and I've DJed in countries, like in different concerts. Like I've had some sense of what it feels like to be on a big stage. Mm. That was bigger, like that was cooler.
Relatively speaking, dude. That was a big deal.
Huge.
Yeah. Okay. That's amazing.
So it's cool to be cultural at where I was. So yeah, I guess I was like, I was a popular dude.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. You had your clique, which is nice.
I had my friends who by the end, like a lot of us are still friends now. Mm. We're all over the world. There's like myself and one other guy who live in Johannesburg. My bachelor party that I had last year had, I think, about 20 guys at it. And I think 18 had to come from either out of the country or out of the province.
Interesting.
Something like that.
Did we cover what your high school film was?
Yeah, dude, Tenacious D's Pick of Destiny.
Okay. Then you studied at Stellenbosch, hey?
Yes.
Okay, and that's when you started radio, because you were on the Stellenbosch radio, hey?
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
What came to you at varsity? What were you studying?
I ultimately ended up with like a BA. Nice. With majors.
Good old bugger all.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's just like really good at Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I ended up with majors in English, philosophy, and politics.
Nice.
In English, I did fair amounts of film, like electives.
Yeah,
did film noir, which was so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
You do like all those old from the 40s and 50s films.
The Maltese Falcon.
That's the Bible, right? Double Indemnity. And a couple others. I remember once bringing Adventure Time did a noir episode, and I brought it to class and made them watch it. And afterwards, the lecturer was like, "This is kind of cool, I guess."
It has some value. Yeah. No, you'd appreciate this. So the guy I sort of battened down the hatches with in COVID, in the lockdown, was a good buddy who moved in as a housemate. And he's Cole, who's on the video store. And we just had nothing to do for weeks, you know. He was teaching English online. I was busy planning the Bioscope move. And so we had this time on our hands. And so we gave ourselves these weeks of movies that it was our time to watch all the movies we wanted to watch. All of that. And so like there was one week where we were like, we're going to do South Korean movies, you know, and you do Memories of Murder and all these kind of important ones you need to watch. And In the Mood for Love, we watched again. But there was one week where we were like, we're going to do a film noir week.
Well, this is so cool, man.
It's like an early Stanley Kubrick. That's also noir black and white. Yeah, that's kind of in that canon. No, it was very cool. There was also one week we were like, we slipped in to all the Fast and the Furious.
Oh, yeah, dude. Which, those are awesome.
Which you just find yourself slipping into. Okay. Okay. So we like a good film noir. Perhaps we should put that as your "it's getting serious" film, which is when we're in varsity.
I feel like it's a stretch. There was a stage because if you do BA, you fit in with like other kids who dig talking about philosophy and art.
Yeah,
which is cool. You know what I mean? Like there was definitely a stage in my varsity career where the majority of my social scene was people like that. Okay. You know, who wanted to talk. Yeah. Arts and music. And
that's why I'm saying it. That's why we call this film the "It's Getting Serious" film, because your life's getting a bit more serious. You're thinking and challenging and,
sorry.
And questioning and becoming who you are.
So there was a film adaption of something that was done that like kind of would be definitive of varsity for me. So I got really into one of my favorite things that I took as an elective in varsity was all about like the Beat Generation in America, like 1950s counterculture. Writers and poets.
You speak of like beat poets. What is a beat poet? What is that? What is beat?
So beat was just like a cultural movement that was kind of the predecessor to what then became maybe the hippies was the next iteration of like a big counterculture movement. Okay. The word hipster originally comes from the Beat Generation.
Okay.
But it was dudes like Jack Kerouac, who famously wrote On the Road, William Burroughs, who wrote Naked Lunch, is kind of like sort of a father figure to the Beats. Allen Ginsberg was probably their most famous poet. And a lot of these people, like, so Allen Ginsberg's thing is his mom is like a communist at a time in America where that's like a really scary thing to be because... Yeah. America is all about the nucleic family and they're all about like good Christian values. And
yeah, the sort of latter part of the movie Oppenheimer points this out. How the communists were being...
The Red Scare.
Yeah, they were being sort of picked out and ejected from society.
Yeah, yeah. You would be encouraged by your government to go and say, hey, I think this person's secretly a communist.
Yeah.
So that's the world that he's born into, and he's got like immigrant parents and he's a gay dude and he's like just everything that you're not... Allen Ginsberg. He's everything that you're not supposed to be.
Yeah.
At the time, then he wrote this poem called Howl.
Okay.
It's a worthwhile story. So he got a Allen Ginsberg when he was young. He gets arrested because he's got a bit of marijuana on him.
Okay.
And at the time, that's illegal. And also, he's like he's known. Then you know he's got a bit of a following. This guy, and they knew that he was a homosexual, and so he has two choices. He can either go to prison or he can go to a mental institution. He chooses to go to a mental institution. Mm. And at the time he meets this guy called Carl Solomon. And Carl Solomon is this person who at the time I think is being like, they're trying lithium on him because that was a big like antipsychotic at the time, which just makes you like a hippo wading in water. You know, it takes all the personality out of you and all the life out of you.
Yeah.
And this Carl Solomon guy, Ginsberg was really inspired by because he kind of felt like, well, if the world is telling me that I'm mad because I'm homosexual and I had some weed on me, then surely the world is the one that's in the wrong. And maybe the world is wrong about other people too. Maybe Carl Solomon, for argument's sake, is actually brilliant and not. There's nothing wrong with him. There's something wrong with the system. So he wrote this poem, which became like a generational defining piece of literature called Howl. And Howl starts off by saying for Carl Solomon, like he dedicated to him. And Howl is brilliant. And it's just this like, it's this stream of consciousness that is all about different takes on the world that Allen Ginsberg had come to understand. So it starts off by saying, like, I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness. And then it goes on to talk about his generation and how the world thought about them and everything. Anyway, so this poem became massive seats of controversy. And there was this really, really famous censorship trial about the poem Howl that... ultimately, Allen Ginsberg won. Well, his lawyers won. He was like largely famously disinterested in the whole thing, like whether there was a trial or not. But the trial was won, and it was seen as like a big pro move for artistic expression, the ability to say things about the world.
Yeah.
So there's a film that was made about Howl, which at that time I really liked because I loved the poem Howl.
Made about the story and Allen Ginsberg about the trial. And the trial. Okay. Yeah.
It's actually James Franco is Allen Ginsberg in the film.
James Franco, okay. And it's called Howl.
Yeah, it's not a particularly good movie, but it's about a subject matter that I cared a lot about in varsity. So
and that's particularly good, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, lovely.
Yeah, so Howl, I'd say Howl. the movie called Heart.
Kind of, yeah, and it perhaps epitomized where your head was at the time, which was learning, discovering, questioning.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Appreciating these moments, you know, where someone could have a fucking law, you know, a court case over a poem.
Over words, yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? It's like, that just sounds so ridiculous now.
Yeah, it does.
But loves you. It just shows you sort of the wild times. I mean, we just, I just watched Widow Clicquot, which is the biopic on the woman who inherited the vineyards of the Clicquot family.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And once she became the widow, she was able to continue her husband's alchemy sort of dreams and sort of experiments and ultimately made Veuve Clicquot. Veuve means widow.
Oh,
so once she became the widow of this Clicquot vineyard, she established Veuve Clicquot as, you know, the famous champagne brand that it is.
Nice.
But it was at a time where she literally, by law, could not run a business because she was a woman. And you're
insane.
Like, holy fuck, that was a time.
That happened, yeah.
It's one thing to sort of, you know, not get the vote. But I mean, to not legally be able to run a business. But the loophole was because she inherited it through a legal will, she was able to run the business.
That's why I like history.
Like, oh my God.
I like history for that reason, because there's a lot of people get on both sides of the aisle, get very like upset these days by things that don't suit them.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about history is that if you like history and you read history, you come to realize the world has always been pretty gray. Like, as in, it's never been binary. There's always been a middle for everything.
Yeah.
And it's always been bizarre, and it's always been brilliant, and it's always been fucked up, and it's always been all of these things.
Yeah.
And if you appreciate history and you come to know that, it can lessen your ability to get so invested in things that are happening now that you think are so
black and white.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a great film that came out for Encounters last year, which was a documentary about the band National Wake.
Yeah.
Which was this punk rock band.
Yeah.
Same as any punk rock band today thinks they exist in their own vacuum and they're the first band to ever be a punk rock band, especially in South Africa. And you're like, no, bud.
Right.
There's been a fantastic history of punk rock bands.
Yeah.
But
totally.
For anyone who thought that, you know, whites and blacks were separated, sure, they were. The law was put in place designed to separate. But a band like National Wake had black guys and white guys playing, and they would play in shows and clubs that had white people and black people. Of course they interacted.
It existed.
Of course
yeah.
they fucking, you know,
that
merged.
But I think it's important to know both. So like, and the more you know about the nuance, the better.
Yeah.
I always think it's like, you know, we think about how there were horse-drawn carriages and then there was cars. But there would have been like a solid 50 years where cars were driving around horse shit that was in the road.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
You brought this up when we were
talking about,
you actually used that analogy when we were chatting about, you know, the evolution of radio.
Think it's a real thing then.
No, but it's a great point. You forget about that. You think it just, everybody woke up one day and, you know, was doing one thing. And it's like, no, we evolve. And it was about, we were chatting about the history, the future of radio.
And
there's of course still a place for radio now.
Yeah.
We're at the point where, yes, if you want to listen to punk rock, you don't actually have to wait until Nick Hammond plays you a punk rock song on radio.
Yes.
You can plug in your iPhone and play whatever you want. But you could participate in these other moments that are happening live, and they are interesting, and you are discovering South Africa or Joburg when you listen to your shows as you move across the country. So you can still be a part of conversations. I think there's a future in more the voice of people like yourself as opposed to music.
I don't know if I would have said this last time, but it's definitely what I think. Is also, I think people are really starting to crave things that they can tap into that they feel like the rest of us are also tapping into.
Yeah.
What I mean is, you know, like often people will make the claim that the Game of Thrones was the last show we all watched.
I make that claim, yeah.
Okay, so I think that's true.
Yeah.
Like that we all got together and we knew. But growing up, everything was like that.
Yeah.
So there's an episode of what it lost, and you come to school the next day and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah,
you know, and your parents are talking about it, and everything kind of is, and it's not about being homogenous in one way and like kind of, you know, like uniformed. It's about the idea that we like the idea of collective experience as human beings. We do. And I think radio is that one thing that you can't really make anything else. Because podcast, I consume way more podcasts than I do radio, but I will never not listen to the radio. And the reason for that is because when I am tuned in and when it's good radio, then it feels like, okay, this is what we're doing together. Mm. It's the same reason, it's a big part of why I think we love watching the Springboks as a country.
Yeah, the sport of it.
Because everybody is doing, we're all deciding it's that this right is our national team.
5 minutes could be very, you know, in 5 minutes' time, it could be very different.
It's live, happening right now. And it's the bigger picture. This is not just about me. It's about community and shared experience. And so then for radio, a big part of the radio that I try to make is if the Springboks win. So recently an example, okay, so the Springboks played at Loftus, was the first of the two Irish tests. So I love rugby.
Sure.
And KB was the singer who sang the national anthem at Loftus Fastfeld. And she made a decision during the call, the last part of the English part of the anthem, to stop singing and let the crowd take over. And it was this beautiful moment where she took a huge risk as an artist. Let's face it, that could have really gone badly. And the crowd did exactly what she'd hoped. And there was just this resounding chant of South Africans that drowned out everything else. And they sang.
I'm getting such goosebumps even thinking about it.
So that happens on Saturday. I know on Sunday I got one job. That job is get KB on the show on Monday before anybody else. Because what that will then do is it will solidify in the audience that this is the show that is plugged into South Africa. Because when South Africa felt that collectively, we're now going to talk about it. We're going to re-experience it.
I'm sure this happens in Loftus specifically, but generally a more white Afrikaans audience would go to a Loftus. And people, I've experienced it, they sort of mumble their way to the best of their ability through the Zulu and the Sotho. And then a deep blow fucking just explodes. Because everyone's like, I know these words.
Yeah, it is. It's
And apparently soccer is the other way around. Where, you know, it's louder in the first half and then the other two sort of subside a little. It's not a racism. It's just a how to pronounce those words better.
So, and I've heard all kinds of nuanced arguments on it. You know, there's also the fact that the first parts of the anthem are the anthem starts off as a prayer, and there's this idea that one wouldn't deliver a prayer in a very chest beating kind of way. I think it is though down to the fact that a lot of older people just have never bothered, and they totally should have bothered because at school I know the whole anthem and I know what it means and I know because I was taught it. It was
I basically entered into that new South Africa.
So did I.
I didn't have any parts that didn't have the first two.
So ideally, it should have happened already, but ideally in 10 years or 15 years, it will be the same throughout the anthem.
Yeah, sure. No, and I'm not even saying it like it's
No. I kind of do think it's a bad thing. I think you should love your anthem, and I think you should know all of it, and you should sing all of it as passionately. I think you should sing all parts of it very passionately.
Personally. No, I agree. I do agree. I'm just saying.
There is a humor to it. It's like a pantomime.
Yeah.
Because there's this wow, and then out of nowhere, it's super noticeable.
Yeah. No, it's a thing. Last little thing here. What would you consider to be one of your comfort blanket films? We call this the film you'd settle down with, one that you feel like you can kind of always go back to, one that you might show your kids. it's all these different things. Yeah. It doesn't have to just be one.
This is a good movie now.
But what's a nice little.
So there's, I'm back on a movie tip at the moment. My wife and I are watching a lot of films.
Cool.
I've recently come to think that Apple may be my favorite of the streaming platforms, honestly speaking. The new stuff they're putting out, the stuff they're putting money into making.
Is Presumed Innocent?
Yeah, have you seen that? Yeah.
Fuck, it's good.
Yeah, it's a great film.
It's a limited series. It plays out like a film, so to speak, because it's this kind of one single start, beginning, and end. Fuck, it's a good show.
So there's a lot on there that I've been watching of late. It's obviously too contemporary to say this now informs my opinion, but I've got a film that I don't necessarily know is going to make me seem particularly interesting or creative.
No, it's not about that.
But a film that I have seen a lot.
Yeah.
And really, it will revisit periodically from time to time. We'll just go and put it on again.
Yeah.
It's called Big Fish. Have you seen it?
Yeah. No, it's special. We screen it every year for Father's Day.
Do you really?
At the Bioscope, yeah.
Okay, so there's some integrity here.
Oh, 100%. It's Tim Burton. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie.
For anyone who doesn't know, in an abridged nutshell, there's this man on his deathbed who's recounting the story of his life to his son, and there'd been a bit of a time in which their relationship had been strained with one another, and there's this presumption that the father's just full of shit.
Yeah,
and overdoes.
They're these tall tales that sound ridiculous.
There's no ways that they happen.
He was part of the circus, and there was this, and there was a witch, and that.
And
the giant that lives in the cave, and there was all this ridiculousness.
And the allegory that follows throughout the film is the idea that a fish is as big as the pond that it's in, and so you can be a big fish in a small pond, but as your pond gets bigger, as in your worldview expands and your perception of the outside world gets bigger, so can you, and so do you.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the film, the end of the film, when the father does eventually pass, because you know that this is coming, this is not like a surprising thing. At his funeral, a lot of the supposedly very tall stories, there's evidence of them.
Yeah.
Because and you can see that he's blown certain things out of proportion. Like, he talks about the time that he dated this these Vietnamese Siamese twins, but it turns out they were just twins, and that's the thing he made up. And
it's so good.
I love that. Okay, good.
It's lovely. No. It's a great movie, and it really, it does come back to sort of warm you. And it's timeless. The father, when he's younger, is played by Ewan McGregor.
Yes.
It's magical. Okay. No, what a great choice.
Yeah, I love it. No, it's just because I've realized one thing I'm self-aware about is that I know that there's a lot of, say, like with the food thing, right? Because I have this following now, and I have these people that will go around the country after the places I've reviewed, and we've had people who've gone from operating out of the back of their mom and dad's kitchen to owning stores in shopping malls and amazing stuff.
Because of the boost you gave them.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the other side of it is, like, I'm fully aware that I'm not necessarily a cultured palate. And so the same is true with music, and the same is true with art, and the same is true. I think a lot of people expect you to have good measured answers when it comes to what movies do you like, what films do you, what music do you listen to, what food do you enjoy eating?
Yeah.
And I don't mind. But
what a lovely point in your life where you can be like, I love a good Gatsby, man.
Yeah. Or just
we're not going to talk about Cordon Bleu bullshit.
Yeah. I think that's it. It's more just like, fuck you, man. I don't care.
Yeah. It's a lovely place to be. And I must say, I've very firmly found myself in a similar place. I want the Bioscope to not be pretentious. It's got to have that depth to it where we are going to explore and relative to the mainstream, we might be trying something a little bit obscure and pushing boundaries or having certain nights for certain things. But for the most part, I want the Bioscope to be a nice comfy shoe. I want to do dress-ups and sing-alongs and quote-alongs, and I want it to be a nice, fun, easy thing on a Friday night for some. And then we can also have a night where we, talk about the universe and physics and
because you think you have to.
Universe on Stage is a live show that happens at the Bioscope where on a Friday night people come and listen to, theories of physics.
That's cool.
It's so cool.
I've seen that on Instagram.
No, and I love that. And so I love the place for that. But I also just love the point in my life where I'm the first to turn around and go, that's a cool word. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to pretend like I know what you're talking about and Google it later.
Exactly.
I've got the confidence. I'm lucky that I've got the confidence to go, what does that mean? That's a nice pretentious word.
Yeah.
And you learn about it and you go, fuck, okay, I'm going to put that in my vocab. Yeah. I'm going back now in books and reading all the books that I sort of should have read, and I'm doing that in inverted commas. I got handed Franz Kafka's Metamorphosis at Varsity from a very cool friend that was like, you've got to read this.
Ah, dude, yeah.
I never fucking found the time to read it then. I'm reading it now. Just finished it. Lovely.
Turns out it's good.
So glad I read it.
No, I laughed because I had a friend who, it took him 3 years to read that book.
Yeah.
And he eventually read, not because he just had other shit going on.
Sure.
And he eventually got through it. He was like, that was great.
Yeah, I've just finished The Little Prince because I never read it when I was a kid.
And that, and I mean, that doesn't take very long.
And the yeah, exactly. And the argument is like, it might not even be for kids. It's like, it's for sort of adults to remember what it's like to be a kid. And it's like, I'm loving that. I'm going through this whole sort of journey there now, which is exciting.
Yeah, because it's now, it's not about, it's it, back in, when you're a kid, you, like, let's face it, like even at varsity, you like the stuff you like because you want to be liked. It's like a, it's like a extension of your personal brand.
Yeah.
I'm into this stuff. I listen to this kind of music. And then you get older, you're like, well, I wonder what I actually like. Like, I wonder what songs really make me feel good. And I wonder what movies actually really stimulate me. And I wonder what, that's, I think, the part of the realization of your 30s is that you start living more for yourself.
I heard a lovely thing from Jack Black. He's doing a bunch of podcasts at the moment.
He's pushing, and he's got a new...
Yeah, he's in Borderlands. And he said something he loves to do, which is such a gift to be able to do now with things like Spotify and Apple Music, is to do an anthology. So pick a band, you know, and start at album one.
I do that.
And you listen to the whole album.
Yeah.
And you go into the next one. And the
that's
next
how
one.
I listen to music now. So
it's what a cool thing to do, you know?
I just finished it with Brenda Fassie because I was was like, this woman was such an icon that she must have some other bangers out there that I've just never heard.
I took a plane with her when I was a little kid. Yeah, I went on a family trip to the States and she was on the flight.
That's amazing.
It's very interesting. She, not to speak badly about her, but... she got a little fucked up on the plane.
I mean, she was.
I know she had her demons, but there was a point where she was like on something. Let's just maybe say alcohol, and she was like singing to like people in our like cabin.
Yeah,
and relatively happy. And then the next morning, when we were going through immigration, she was like in tears.
Yeah,
and then I was like, that was my introduction to Brenda Fassie.
It sounds like the experience that many people have. Yeah. I mean, she was ashamed. She famously battled hectic demons.
But one little thing which I can leave you with now is, you speak of Apple and Apple TV Plus creating good stuff and commissioning good stuff. There is a film that will be coming to Apple TV Plus soon, which we screened at the Bioscope, called Fly Me to the Moon. Amazing. Do you know about it?
No.
It's a bit of a smaller cinema release because it was destined really at the end of the day for Apple. It's Scarlett Johansson, Channing Tatum, and it's all about the moon landings.
I'm in.
Apollo 11. Channing Tatum is running the Apollo missions, the big guy in the big room with lots of people, you know, with the microphone
that
coordinates these rockets taking off.
Says Houston.
Yeah. And he's based in the sort of Florida part. You know, the whole point was in Florida, that's where the rockets took off.
Yes.
And then there was a point where then Houston then
correct
was strategically able to then track it once in the sky.
Yes.
Scarlett Johansson plays a very savvy, top of her game marketing guru who's brought on by the government to help sell the moon landings. So she's sort of brought it to the cereal boxes.
And this is all a true story.
Sponsorships. Well, it's inspired by the fact that NASA very famously in the 60s was a bit unpopular in the sense that the Vietnam War was happening, civil rights movements were happening, and so America was saying, we've got so many problems at home, why are we going to the fucking moon? Like, why are we spending all this money going to the moon? Why are we spending all this money killing our boys in Vietnam? So it was a very unpopular thing, but the government knew that if they could sell the moon properly, they could rally some national support. They could
be better than the Russians.
Win the space race and the Cold War and all that shit. So she comes on board there, and then, of course, now it's the sort of creative license to make a fun movie where, of course, now there's a little romance. But then halfway through the movie, the same government that folks that hired her say, we want you to make a fake moon landing. We want you to set this up in a studio in case these guys don't actually make it to the moon. We can cut to the fake landing. So it's a lovely play on our memory of was it real? Was it fake?
Yeah.
And I don't want to give away what happens in the movie, but it's very cool and it will come to Apple soon.
I'm in.
So that's what I'm going to rent you. And I hope to drink a bit of whiskey with you at some point soon.
I'd love that.
I hope to play this cool version of golf with you sometime soon.
Whenever you want.
Yeah. I'm keen.
Good.
Okay.
Great.
All right. You must get on with your day. It started very early.
Ah, shit. Yeah. We're trying to. There's a plumbers at our house because the shower is shocking us.
That's not a shower you want to have.
No.
You just want a shower. You don't want to be shocked.
No, exactly.
Okay, you got to fix that. But yeah, you're going to leave with Fly Me to the Moon, which is, I think, still screening in some cinemas. We screened it at the Bioscope for a limited period. We just ran out of space for it. But it's a great, solid movie. It's a good date night movie. So when it comes to Apple, it'll be a good date night on at home.
Yeah.
Also, for someone who appreciates and loves history, it's a nice little nostalgia in that sense, that it's got this cool 60s look and feel to it, obviously. But yeah, thank you for coming. Thanks for returning.
Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, and we will see you soon.
Cheers.
Cheers. All right. What a lekker chat. What a lekker dude. We do have, in the depths of our archive, the very first chat with Nick.
Yes.
But yeah, we've also had Kerri-Ann Alliston. We've had a few other radio personalities. Mm. So it's lovely to catch up with Nick again. One of my fondest memories of Nick was knowing that he lived in Killarney when I lived in Killarney.
Oh, okay.
And we'd always made these plans to meet up and hang out, but yes, we never really did, which is a pity.
And no comment on Graham's extra heart.
Just wait, man. And then one day there was like an earthquake. There was like a tremor. Or something.
I think if it's the one I'm thinking of, I remember this.
And we got in touch, and then it prompted him to come over, and we had a whiskey.
Okay.
And then I remember we hung out because of the earthquake.
Yes.
And we got a little fucked up together. It was cool.
I remember the social media posts of people posting, like, you know, the ubiquitous white plastic garden furniture,
yeah,
of like a white chair falling over that just says, never forget.
I'll never forget your original height.
Oh, thank you. You know, weirdly, my legs feel fine, but I have these weird scars where I think my kidneys are supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about.
Okay.
Looks like a hatchet job.
As long as it's the right tools, guys.
As long as it's just one kidney. If it's both, we're fucked. You've got a couple of hours.
Yeah, I paid off my credit cards. Just a coincidence.
I once Googled how much a kidney could
get you. It's a lot of money. You.
It's a good couple hundred thousand.
Depending on where you go. Right buyer.
Yeah.
And you can
how
survive on
you can
and
you keep can, them.
You can survive on one.
Yeah, you can slightly lengthen someone else's life while significantly reducing yours.
Yeah. Shit.
But what about the daughters, yeah?
All right. Thank you, guys. I think Graham, rest up.
Yeah.
And get those kidneys checked out.
Rest up, stretch up.
Gaddy, thank you for putting the movies in the most confusing order I could imagine.
You just got to ask me. I know where everything is.
All right. And thank you for listening thus far, guys. We appreciate you, and thanks for wandering in, as we said. And we'll see you guys again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Cheers.